You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I cover the Chicago Bears for NBC Sports Chicago, and I cover the NFL for Pro Football Focus. Locked On Bears is your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. And today, we're diving into the All-22 film from the Bears' win over the Buccaneers to try and figure out how this Bears offense exploded for 48 points and 6 touchdowns from Mitchell Trubisky. We'll also look at some of the key battles emerging on this offense with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen battling for touches and James Daniels and Eric Kush competing at left guard. And we'll wrap up with a look at this magnificent Bears defense and try and see what the keys were to shutting down Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston and really everything the Buccaneers tried to throw at them, at least until late in the fourth quarter. But we start, as we so often do, with Mitchell Trubisky, Matt Nagy, and this Bears offense. And for the first time, we're not talking about disappointment and, you know, concern and, you know, future potential. It is right here, right now, 6 touchdowns, 350 plus yards through the air, 50 plus yards on the ground, something no quarterback has ever done that combination of, I might add. And as I went back through this All-22 tape, expecting is the right word, but I was trying to find, okay, what are the Bears doing differently, right? The question I think on everybody's mind is, why this week? Why did everything come together in such a way against this Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense? And I came away almost surprised that it still felt like the same idea behind the offense, that it was a lot of one read type throws for Mitchell Trubisky. And that's perfectly okay. You know, you're not seeing him, even in this game, really go through a full progression. There's still a progression in terms of like one or two receivers on the same side of the field, but on the majority of Trubisky's plays, still, you're basically isolating one or two players in coverage and basically reading, okay, which receiver does he go with, and whichever receiver he doesn't go with, you throw to the other one. And in weeks past, that has led to curl routes to Allen Robinson, or the dump-off pass to Jordan Howard out of the backfield. And the difference in this game, obviously, that, you know, reading that one defender led Trubisky to open receivers down the sidelines and, you know, big plays downfield. And that ultimately comes down to vulnerabilities in this Buccaneers defense, one that was incredibly poorly coached and just one of the worst defensive performances I think we've seen out of a team this year. We kind of talked about that a little bit yesterday with Trevor Sikkema from Pewter Report. If you haven't listened to that podcast, he gave us a great sort of Tampa Bay perspective on what went wrong for them on yesterday's Locked On Bears. But going back through the All-22, I noticed from a coverage standpoint, Tampa Bay did a lot of the same things over and over again. It was cover one and cover three, all of these single deep coverages, which doesn't put any other safety help on the outside, only a single deep safety in the middle of the field. I counted 2 deep coverages on 4 out of Mitchell Trubisky's 28 total passing plays. And on those 4 plays, he was 1 of 3 with that 14-yard touchdown to Allen Robinson, mind you, and a sack. But the majority of the game, and again, that was in the red zone, so it's a little bit of a different ball game there, but majority of the game, single deep coverage, and the Bears were expert at taking advantage of it, and the Buccaneers consistently failed to adjust. Like, for Matt Nagy, it was just a lot of the same route concepts. The Bears had 4 or 5, at least, big plays downfield, just hitting the same post-wheel route concept combination, where you have the outside receiver run a post route, so they go about you know, 10, 15 yards straight downfield and then turn about 45 degrees towards the middle of the field to essentially take the attention of the outside cornerback and turn in to then take the attention of the single deep safety. And then on the slot to the inside of that outside receiver, you have a receiver running a wheel route where they run out towards the sideline and then they turn upfield and run up down the sideline and they fill the vacated space that was once occupied by the defender that the outside receiver took away with his route, and it isolates a slot defender to try and cover that double move out and up one-on-one, and it's just not something that very many cornerbacks, linebackers, and safeties in the NFL can do very effectively. Like you'll see, the main way to cover a wheel route is to have an outside defender pass it off on from his underneath coverage to a deep coverage defender behind him, and you basically have to bracket it with two different guys. But because the Tampa Bay Buccaneers kept running a single deep safety coverage, it was there for Matt Nagy. And I know it can be a little bit hard to visualize just hearing it on a podcast, but if you are part of the Locked On Bears Facebook group, I posted a video in there that actually the Philadelphia Eagles had put out about this concept in particular, how it works, how it's kind of run, and they show examples of it with the play. And then with that, I included a play where the Bears ran it against the Buccaneers here. So if you want to be able to see this play and kind of how this concept works, you got to join the Locked On Bears Facebook group. We broke it down with a video in there. Again, just go to facebook.com, search Locked On Bears group, or if you go to the Locked On Bears Facebook page, there's a button right on there to join the group. You just request to be in the group. I make sure you're not a Russian spy or a robot trying to infiltrate and spam our group. I approve, and then you're in, and you can join in on more daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. It's a great way for a lot of fellow Bears fans and listeners of this podcast to connect and get even more Bears talk in their life, and then you can see exactly how this post-wheel concept worked, because Matt Nagy just kept coming back to it over and over again. And give credit to Matt Nagy for running it in different ways. You know, sometimes it was Taylor Gabriel in the slot. Sometimes it was Trey Burton running the wheel route from a tight end position. Sometimes it was Tariq Cohen coming out of the backfield on play action, running a longer wheel route that, again, a lot of these plays do take a lot of time to deliver and to develop. And so, I mean, to me, the biggest key for this offensive success was this pass protection. I mean, again, I'm not trying to take anything away from Mitchell Trubisky. He made some phenomenal throws here, but, you know, everyone saw how great Mitchell Trubisky is. I don't have to go back through and explain that to anyone, but we're kind of looking at what exactly were the keys to him being able to be so successful. And it's these passing concepts. It's a defense that consistently failed to adjust, and it's pass protection, which I guess goes along with that defense's failure to adjust. Trubisky was under pressure on 4 out of his 28 dropbacks. I believe he was 0 for 3 on those 4 plays under pressure. And, you know, Matt Nagy accounted for that a little bit by adding extra pass blockers in there. We saw Deion Sims stay in the block a lot more than we've seen in any other game. We saw Jordan Howard stay in the block quite a bit. Ben Broniker and Trey Burton doing it as well. And, you know, I think even bigger than that was just Tampa Bay's failure to recognize a big weakness and attack a big weakness of Mitchell Trubisky. I think we saw through the first 3 games of the season that when he gets blitzed, he gets a little bit excited, a little bit happy-footed, and rushes his decision-making and his throws and made a lot of mistakes against the blitz. That was kind of the MO on how to slow down this Bears offense. Yet Tampa Bay blitzes Trubisky a total of 6 times in the game. And you think, okay, maybe the defensive coordinator, Mike Smith, you know, doesn't trust his defensive backs enough to hold up with a blitz in front of them. But, I mean, the defensive backs weren't holding up on these long developing plays downfield. And I don't know, after a couple touchdowns on these deeper throws, you got to do something if you're a defensive coordinator. Tampa Bay absolutely should have gone to the blitz, not only just to mix it up, but also because Trubisky has struggled with it. Tampa Bay consistently failed to adjust. Matt Nagy continued to take advantage of it. Mitchell Trubisky continued to take advantage of it. He was confident. He was calm, cool, collected, and just everything offensively seemed to work in this passing game. And everything seemed to go wrong for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Buccaneers needed to make some serious changes, and, you know, if you look in your closet and think the same thing, then you got to check out swap.com. Swap.com is the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. They allow you to easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds with easy-to-use filters that help you find just what you need. With swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price on your favorite brands like Lululemon, Nike, J.Crew, Gap, and it's all quality, hand-inspected items. And if it doesn't fit, you can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. Locked On Bears listeners get a special offer at swap.com. You can get 35% off select items on your first order if you use the promo code Locked On at checkout. They've got a great selection of clothes. They've got new deals every day on their homepage. And again, you get 35% off with the promo code Locked on swap.com. So speaking of swapping, the Bears seem to make a pretty significant running back change against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was the Tariq Cohen show. I mean, he was the leading rusher in the ground game. He was the leading receiver in the passing game. And really just the dynamic all-around threat that I think, you know, everyone knows Tariq Cohen is capable of doing, but clearly Nagy found a lot of different ways to get the ball in his hands. 13 carries, 53 yards, and 7 catches for 121 yards and a touchdown. I mean, after Mitchell Trubisky, he was your big-time offensive performer, and it left Jordan Howard spending a lot of time on the sideline. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I was watching this game live, I kept thinking, man, where is Jordan Howard? Are they going to get him playing time? Is he hurt and battling an injury that we didn't know about? Sounds like none of that was the case. And actually, you know, when you go back through and look at it, Jordan Howard ended up playing more total snaps than Tariq Cohen. Howard had 33, Cohen had 29. And I thought, okay, well, did all those come in the second half? But surprisingly, not as many as I thought. You know, in the first half, it was Cohen 26 snaps, Howard 21. Clearly a paradigm shift in terms of who was getting the lead running back roles. And it's certainly very notable that Cohen had five more than Howard. But, you know, Cohen goes on to only play 3 second half snaps, and Howard played another, what would that be, 12, if my quick math is correct. And again, Cohen had more of the rushing success when, from a pure statistics and a number standpoint, Howard once again struggled to create a lot of down big play opportunities. 11 carries, 25 yards, sub 2.5 yards per carry for Howard, and Cohen sitting at just over 4 yards per carry. So the question becomes, okay, is Tariq Cohen going to take over as the Bears' lead running back? Matt Nagy talked to reporters on Monday and kind of indicated it'll be a game-to-game kind of situation with, you know, depending on the opponent and the matchup, that will determine where these running back snaps and touches come. But I think, you know, no means should you take any receiving touches away from Tariq Cohen. You know, that doesn't really affect a lot of what Jordan Howard does. But I still stand before you today, and technically I'm sitting right now, so full disclosure, I record this podcast sitting down and not standing, but I stand before you today still on the defense of Jordan Howard. Yes, sub 2.5 yards per carry is what they might call no bueno. But again, looking back over Jordan Howard's runs on the All-22 here, he carried the ball 11 times. On 9 of those 11 runs, there was a defender that made contact with him in the backfield or right at the line of scrimmage. 9 out of his 11 runs had a defender waiting for him at or behind the line of scrimmage. The other 2 runs where he didn't get met by a defensive player there went for 11 yards and 5 yards. So clearly, when the offensive line, and throw the tight ends in there as well, which we'll get into in a minute, when the offensive line and the run blocking is there, Jordan Howard is fully capable of creating big rushing plays for your offense and consistently running. I mean, if you take Jordan Howard and if he gets tackled right where he gets contacted by the defender first, like as if it were like two-hand touch or just an instant tackle every time he's hit by a defender first, he would have had 11 carries for negative 3 yards. He had 28 yards after contact, 25 total yards. He did more work behind the line of scrimmage than beyond it in this game, which is insane. So the question you're left is, okay, well then, why did Tariq Cohen have more success? And I didn't necessarily feel like the blocking was super different for the two of them. You know, it wasn't as though they were creating these big holes for Cohen, but there was a lot of times when, you know, in a game like this, when your run blocking just isn't there, your faster running back can sometimes just outrun defenders and bounce it to the outside and get to the edge and outrun the defensive end or outrun a linebacker from the middle of the field. And I think it just kind of played out that way. You know, sometimes from a play-to-play standpoint, the run blocking will be better, and maybe Cohen had a couple plays with better blocking, but also created a couple things with his speed, whereas Howard is a guy that is elite at following his blocks and setting up and taking the most of what the offensive line can give you. Cohen has more of that ability to totally create for himself. Now, that doesn't mean Cohen is ready to be an every down bell cow running back, and even Matt Nagy kind of conceded that's never going to be Cohen's role, but they need to get better run blocking going for Jordan Howard. I also think at times they're running into some unfavorable fronts from the defense, too many defenders in the box, maybe sometimes predictable formations offensively when you get some tight ends in there and three tight ends lined up in, you know, on the line of scrimmage versus splitting them out in the slot. Sometimes that can be a little bit more of a run versus a pass indicator and let the defense be more confident stepping up and being aggressive against the run. So some of that is certainly a factor, and I think they also expect run more when Jordan Howard is in the game versus Cohen, who makes them expect pass a little bit more. But, you know, the offensive line on a whole, I think, is very average run blocking right now, maybe slightly below average on the whole. And the tight ends continue to hold them back in the ground game. You know, when they're blocking as the sixth man on the line of scrimmage, they're just as important to the success of that running play as the five offensive linemen. And Deion Sims continues to be just awful. Awful, awful run blocking from him. He's okay as a pass protector in this game. I'll give him credit there. But man, I don't know why he continues to see the field and they continue to try and run behind him and Trey Burton, who also is not a good run blocker. But even on this offensive line, I think sometimes it feels like it's sacrilegious to be critical of Kyle Long, but he has not been good in the running game this year at all. There are plays when he just stops his block straight up too early, his technique is off, and he struggles sometimes with sort of that thinking aspect. Like when he lines up on one guy and can just block him downfield, he's fine. But when he has to combo block and try and get to a second linebacker or try and take a block from a teammate, it doesn't go well when he has to kind of operate too much in space. And then the other question goes to the other guard spot with James Daniels versus Eric Kush. And, you know, how were they impacting the running game, and who's going to start next game, which is 2 weeks from now after the bye. And evaluating their performances kind of head-to-head in the same position, I didn't think either one was a lot better than the other. You know, when I watched James Daniels, I saw a lot of ups and downs. Saw some real big punishing run blocks where he creates a gap for usually Tariq Cohen, who bounced a lot of his runs off that left side. But there were also some plays where he gets beat and gets stood up by Gerald McCoy and ultimately hurts Jordan Howard a lot of times, where Jordan Howard can't really make a cut off of it because he hasn't really established a blocking direction in either way. Whereas while Daniels had the ups and the downs, with some really great ups and some struggling downs, Eric Kush was a lot more even keel in the middle. There weren't very many big-time blocks where he's really creating a lot of space. There weren't really any plays where he was beaten badly and, you know, impacting the run in a negative way. Just didn't really move the needle either direction in the running game. And I thought they were both fine in pass protection. Didn't really get beat, you know, not really facing a strong pass rush. So, you know, I'm left feeling like James Daniels didn't, quote-unquote, win the starting left guard job, in my opinion. He didn't, you know, wasn't head and shoulders better than Eric Kush, but I do think we may see him start week 6, I believe, against the Miami Dolphins. Will be that first game after the bye. I think they put him in this game and ran that rotation with him to kind of get that transition going at the left guard spot, get his feet wet against a bad defense, clearly, and then be able to hand over the keys after a bye week of working as a starter and make him the starter week 6. I mean, I don't have anything other than just pure speculation on that, but it feels to me like that would be the reason you go to the left guard rotation in this game to eventually then make the permanent change after the bye week. But we'll see. It is still a transition there, and it's still something to be determined as we move forward. And as we do move forward here, with no Bears game to play on Sunday, there's no Bears spread to bet against on mybookie.ag, but plenty of other games to get involved on the action. And if you're looking to get going in the world of sports betting, mybookie.ag is the place to do it. They've been in business for years. They've got great reviews online, and they've got a mobile site that really is smooth and easy to use. Lots of different ways to get involved on there, even beyond the spread picks and the over-under. There's some fun prop bets like about politics and who's going to be the next pope, and even some television show bets you can make, like Game of Thrones. It really is fun to just kind of look around on mybookie.ag. And when you're ready to lay down some cold hard cash, use the promo code LOCKEDON when you make your first deposit, and MyBookie will match it dollar for dollar, giving you double the money to win big with. Because at MyBookie.ag, you play, you win, you get paid. As we figure out what exactly went so well for this Bears team and their win over the Buccaneers, we come at last to this defense. The group that's becoming so good, they're almost a foregone conclusion that so many guys are going to step up and play well and end the Ryan Fitzmagic this season. And it was just very striking when put side by side with the lack of coaching from Tampa Bay compared to what Vic Fangio was doing. The Bears threw a lot of different coverage looks at Fitzpatrick and Jameis Winston after him. We saw a lot more two deep coverages than we've seen in weeks past. I think the Bears ran cover two for the first time, like true cover two for the first time all season, and some two deep with man underneath and some more cover four and cover six, really trying to take away some of that deep ball. And it worked for the most part. I mean, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick got one to DeSean Jackson when he beat Kevin Tolliver down the left sideline in the second quarter, if I remember correctly. But to me, beyond just taking away the deep ball, the story of the game, of course, is this pass rush. Once again, Ryan Fitzpatrick really folded under pressure, which was something he had been good at in previous games. But I think when it's Khalil Mack, when it's Akeem Hicks for some of the game, when it's a bunch of different guys coming at you, while you're also falling behind over and over on the scoreboard, it can just be a little bit too much. And, you know, it starts with Khalil Mack. I mean, I don't have anything new to say about Khalil Mack. What is there you can add about Khalil Mack? The one thing I threw out there on Twitter is that, you know, he has a forced fumble now in each of his first four games with the Bears, and he's becoming known for that now. And the last guy in Chicago that was known for forced fumbles, Charles Tillman, well, he had the peanut punch, right? I mean, that was the word for what he did. So I posed this question on Twitter. If Charles Tillman's forced fumbles are called the peanut punch, what do you call Khalil Mack's forced fumbles? And I got some good answers. And, you know, nothing, I didn't get anything that really, you know, rolled off the tongue perfectly and takes the cake. If you have any suggestions, you know, throw them out on our Locked On Bears Facebook group. Let us know on the Locked On Bears voicemail and text line, 312-620-8590. Some of the ones we heard on Twitter: the Mac Smack, the Mac Hack, Mac Munch, Mac Attack, the Khalil Peel, and the Khalil Steel. But I think the one that made me laugh the most, I think, was the first one. What do you call Khalil Mack's forced fumbles? Somebody said, unfair. And I thought that was just a perfect response. It was right after he had made the play, and it's just true, man. Khalil Mack is unfair, but he was not the only Bears defender getting after the quarterbacks. Roy Robertson-Harris had another big game. I think he had a sack and three hurries by Pro Football Focus numbers. Keem Hicks was real strong before he got ejected, which I still haven't seen a better angle of. You know, the All-22 film doesn't show the contact with the referee. Just a weird play that might ultimately get him suspended for Week 6. We will monitor that situation moving forward on the podcast here. But, you know, despite all of the success we saw a lot in this front seven, I can't help but notice another pretty quiet performance from Leonard Floyd. And I feel like I've pointed this out for almost every game now. So I'm not going to pile on, but I think PFF had him with one hit on 21 pass rushes. It's not a great win percentage, not a great pressure percentage. Not seeing that guy take advantage of Khalil Mack the same way his teammates have, and it's still, you know, still has the hand injury, still a concern for me there. But also thought it was another nice step forward for Roquan Smith, just getting more and more comfortable in the linebacker position, dropping back in coverage a lot and starting to have a better feel for the spacing there and sort of how close Danny Trevathan is and just kind of where he fits in this Bears defense. Now, the big question mark we had talked a lot about leading into this game, Kevin Tolliver at the cornerback position. We had gotten some text to the voicemail line asking about Kevin Tolliver and how well he performed. Also, a texter had texted in about Howard and Cohen and also Daniels and Cush. So I appreciate everybody using that line. Again, 312-620-8590. There are a couple voicemails as well that I wanted to get to, but just don't have time today. But with a bye week, we'll be sure to get to some more fan questions and get some voicemails in there as well. So don't be afraid to call in, but the text works just as well. And Kevin Tolliver, I thought, still, you know, looks like an undrafted rookie free agent. He got beat a few times that maybe you wouldn't want to see, but also held his own for a lot of the game. I think the numbers from PFF were 10 targets for and 5 catches for 71 yards, which is 7.1 yards per target and, 14 yards per catch, which is not ideal. You know, we mentioned the one to DeSean Jackson that Fitzpatrick got was the one deep ball they had, and, you know, that's not great, but obviously you can live with what he did. Didn't hurt the Bears defense that much, and he wasn't terrible. He was an undrafted rookie free agent in his first career start, and that's about how he played, and it really could have gone a lot worse there from him. And to his credit, 0 missed tackles in the game and only 2 yards after catch allowed on catches thrown at him in coverage. So, you know, if he's getting beaten allowing the catch, he's not allowing much beyond that. So I think an encouraging first start for a guy that could have been pretty well overwhelmed but was able to play confidently given how everyone else around him was continuing to play well. You know, throw Kyle Fuller in that category of playing really well and holding down his side. Eddie Jackson continues to emerge as one of the better young safeties in the NFL. Really continue to like what I see from him, and just, I mean, man, hard to find much to not like out of this Bears defense, and just so many things continue to go right, and there's not a lot of reason at this point to feel like that's going to change, at least as they, you know, face the AFC East coming up after the bye week. The Jets, the Bills, the Dolphins aren't going to pose too much trouble there, and it's full steam ahead for this Bears defense. And it'll be full steam ahead for us on Locked On Bears, breaking it down 5 days a week. Everything Bears is here, your podcast destination for daily Chicago Bears news and analysis. You can get even more daily Bears news and analysis in our Locked On Bears Facebook group. I've already got a nice cohort of Bears fans bringing up the conversation, getting things going, and just talking Bears on demand. And it's also a direct line to me as well. We've been posting some extra stuff in addition to this podcast. There were some All-22 notes that I didn't get to today on today's show that I'll throw in there as well. So plenty of reasons to go on Facebook, search Locked On Bears group, or just go to the Locked On Bears page and click the join group button there and continue to join in the conversation. That way, you can also join in the conversation with the voicemail text line, like I've been saying, 312-620-8590 is the number. And, you know, we don't bite. We treat your questions with respect and get them answered on the show, and just helps you join the conversation with me. Because we'll be breaking down the Bears all through the bye week. We'll get some Mitchell Trubisky talk and some in-depth analysis with our good friend Mark Schofield, who's been on this podcast a number of times. He'll be breaking down Trubisky in film form on Pro Football Weekly, and we'll get his thoughts on kind of this latest development in the quarterback. And, you know, we'll keep you up to date on the latest and greatest out of Hallis Hall, even as this team takes a break. We do not here on Locked On Bears, because you know what? Even when the Bears are off, it's still always time to bear down.